So I'm calling. Today we're calling to order the ASH IOC. I'm hearing a lot of background noise.
Could you guys please mute yourself? If you don't have a mute button, you could use star six. There tends to be a lot of feedback.
Okay, is that better?
Yes.
Okay, so once we've called the meeting to order, are there any conflicts of interest that anyone has to convey or reveal? Okay, let's move on to the next item. I'm trying to read it while I'm at a stoplight, so let's see. Has everyone read the meeting minutes? There was only one item that I called the hospital to follow up on, because from our last meeting, since I had met with them before the meeting, the only question we had for them for clarification was, can patients get their medical records while still patients? And a follow-up was, if so or if not, are the procedures the same on the forensic side and the civil side? And we wanted to understand that process. And we did not get that answer yet. So I move to carry that same question forward to this month's questions for the hospital, since we didn't get to I didn't get the answer on that. Do I hear a second?
I can second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone? Okay. Anyone opposed? Okay, so moved. Next, let's see if we have an update from AVOA.
We do. So I currently have about 200 brochures with me that I brought over for you all. The business cards have yet to be completed. I did follow up on a status on those, hoping they are completed by next month. And again, this is in order to recruit, as well items that you could leave with patients at ASH if they ever asked for any, for recruiting members as well. And then the other item that we did have is the Adult Abuse and Neglect Task Force report, specifically for the Independent Oversight Committees. There is item number, recommendation number 3 and recommendation number 6 that applies to the Independent Oversight Committee, and I could send that report if you do not have it. Committee members don't have it. I could share that link with you all so you could have the full report. But again, the only two recommendations that affect the Independent Oversight Committee would be recommendation number 3 and recommendation number 6.
Veronica, I did send it out, but if you could share with us again, I have the report, but since I'm driving, could you share the recommendations, the specific items for us?
Yeah. So number 3 is, by December 31st of 2019, DES Access, Arizona Department of Health Services, should develop and disseminate to all stakeholders comprehensive flowcharts detailing reporting and investigation processes and oversight mechanisms, including the DES Abutment Office and the Independent Oversight Committees, for all type of abuse, neglect, and exploitation concerns, incidents, and allegations for all relevant subpopulations. The flowchart should be specific, the authority and responsibilities of each entity, and should update as the lead entity for this is DES. So they are currently working on that flowchart. And then the recommendation number 6 is, beginning no later than December 31st of 2019, DES Access, Arizona Department of Health Services, and the chairs of the IOCs and or representatives of the IOCs from DOA should hold quarterly meetings to ensure an understanding of each entity's role and responsibility in regards to incident reporting and investigation, and to support a collaborative approach when an incident occurs and multiple entities are involved. So those would be the two recommendations, like I said, that affect the IOCs. As of right now, Lori, there are talks about holding a meeting on January the 17th. I'm okay. Not quite sure. I know it's going to be in the morning, but I'm not quite sure what will be done at the meeting. I believe it's just the first meeting to figure out what's going to happen on the state meetings moving forward. We will follow up with more information on that. But the lead entity on that is Access. So as soon as we hear more from Access, we'll definitely follow up with you and provide you with that information. So either yourself or a committee member representative can attend that meeting.
Okay. We did have our first meeting with Larry and all the chairs on, it was Monday afternoon. Oh. We had a conference call.
Yes. During that conference call, something that was brought up to the attention was the administrative roles of ADOA with the Independent Oversight Committee, such as the posting of agendas, reservation of rooms, more of the administrative side of things, would be transferring over back to the agency liaisons. In this case, it'd be for ASH administration. ADOA definitely will continue to be here in supporting the IOCs, but just the administrative work will move back to the agency. What we hope to do is leave everything as is, such as the room reservation, leave it here. The call-in number, if you guys like this new platform with the Google Meet, I believe we could also leave that. Just the person, the responsible party would be the agency liaison.
Would they, again, record the meeting and send meeting minutes, or?
That we do not know, Lori. I think what Larry's vision for that is to have another meeting with the chairs and discuss that further in detail. Different committees do it a little bit differently, specifically for ASH. You guys take minutes and we record your minutes. So if ever you guys want to listen to your meetings, we have those recordings for you available. But the minutes that you guys post are the best thing ever. It's just easier for the agencies to follow up on those requests that are typed up. So we're hoping to actually model your IOC and how it works because you guys do both. You have the recording and you also type your minutes. So we're hoping to have that as a model for other IOCs.
Oh, that's good.
You're here.
I'm sorry.
I'm here. Hold on one sec. We'll be in a sec.
I have no idea. In the call, do we have anybody from the ASH, from Arizona State Hospital? They probably didn't get the number.
They don't call in.
They don't typically participate.
No, we're talking about patients at ASH.
That's something we brought up, that it was a problem that I think last month the patients were actually told to get out of the room and that they couldn't be on the call. We'll be in the room in a second. We'll continue.
Alrighty. If everyone else on the call could just hold on tight. All righty, Lori is back in the room here, and we will resume shortly. The phone lines were not working, so my computer is the recorder at right now.
An hour. Okay, sorry about that, guys. We will continue on. But I think our concern with the IOCs was there was a reason that and now there was some concern if we were going back
for at Arizona State Hospital. No, at ADOA, and you are correct on that, Laura. ADOA was brought in to have that oversight between the independent oversight committees and the agencies to maintain a collaborative relationship to ensure that they are responding to your request. So ADOA will still continue to have that oversight. Our hope was that by moving those administrative responsibilities to the agency would then have to quote-unquote, be forced to attend the meeting. So that's kind of the approach to that, is hoping that they are more involved.
I think when we had that meeting with the administration of ASH, the concern was that state employees, they did not want to come to the meeting and respond to anything after meetings. So I'm not sure if they will or not.
Okay.
So is the unit quick to call in today? They were. We asked Jeff to make sure that they had, that the staff was made aware of the fact that they're allowed to participate. Last month, in one of the units, they were in a, they went into the room and then staff was going to get all the rooms in. Get off the call. That has not happened before.
Yeah.
I tried to talk to Jack earlier today and I couldn't get over and up her, but put that back on a request again to make sure that all the units have the opportunity to call us and participate in the IOC. I know
Mm-hmm.
So we should have that as well. Can we get the next one with the team can talk about these questions?
Oh, yeah.
I'll answer something. Mm-hmm. And the ASH IOC annual report, I have it in outline, and what I was going to do, since I figured I'd do it over the next 2 weeks, I will send it out to the committee. For the most part, most of the reports, because we were kind of slow last year, we kind of, this all rebuilt. So it really is all about kind of restructuring, rebuilding, getting training to understand what the rules and expectations are for the community. And we really didn't have a lot of requests for visits on the civil side. We went on maybe one or two degrees, and we weren't seeing practice. So it was a quieter year. So when I send that out to committee members, if you want to respond, only respond to me, because if we respond to each other, then we're having a meeting which violates open meeting law. So if one-on-one you have a conversation, it's okay. But if three or four of us are on a group email talking about something of importance, that's not allowed. So what you can do is just write back just to me and say, edit this, or call that, or whatever. We just don't want to violate the rules. And we already kind of did the review of the action items. Subcommittee, Kathy, do you want to talk about our subcommittee meeting? If you're on mute, I think it sounds sense to go.
Yes, pound 6 to unmute yourself. Star 6, sorry. I did hear her in the line.
Oh.
Kathy, are you still on the line with us?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay, it's very difficult for me to hear what's being discussed, but very quickly we discussed holiday party, and we're asking for, and correct me, Lori, but if any IOC members want to donate, and it's up to anyone, you know, to participate if they want to. And we discussed just the boy. I don't even think we picked any specific items, did we, Lori?
When I talked to the hospital, they, in order to make sure we have clear boundaries between us and the patient, they preferred
right.
that we did not bring things there, buy things for them, that if we wanted to give the patients gifts, that we donate money, and I sent out the form. No one feel obligated if you want to use that. But they will buy appropriate gifts, and appropriate for things like socks, wallets, things that the patients, that their teams think that they need. So that's the only, we're not sure when they're going to hand it out or how, but I'm sure they'll use the money wisely and make sure everyone has a gift.
Yeah, so I spoke to Jackie. I guess the patient was getting started getting stuff.
Okay.
So
how much have we donated so far?
So a lot. I've donated $250, and that will basically, from what I understand, it needs to go towards holiday party.
I'll give them $1,000. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So, let's be able to do something.
Thank you, Lori.
And in the interim, Leon has entered the room, and so has Alan. So for Natalie, that way you can keep track.
Great. Alice and who else? I'm sorry.
Leon.
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble hearing.
Leon. Last name Canty.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So, again, you know, if you want to donate, you can. Want to donate a dollar, you can. At least they know that we're giving food to patients and we're not trying to give it to one person mm-hmm. and develop an improper relationship. Anything else, Kathy?
Well, I believe that was it.
Okay. So next on the education support update. What I did is, you know, a lot of the patients have asked and they've mentioned that they feel bad that they can no longer go to school unless they have means to do it while they're in the hospital. Some people can, some people can't. So I reached out to some foundations and asked if anyone would, if it's in their mission, because some of them have education, if it's in their mission to help people that are in vulnerable populations get an education, in particular the education at ASH. So they asked me, well, how many people? So I said, well, I don't think everyone's going to go to school. And I don't think everyone's at the same level. So I said, just guessing, and I'll validate it with ASH administration. Some people probably need their GED.
Mm-hmm.
Some people probably have some college. Probably some have degrees. And probably, so there's probably a combination of GED, general learning interest, and some want certificates or degrees. And so I asked, I had a conversation with the provost and the head of school, just the students. I had a conference call with them, asking them, and I thought I printed it out, could be in this mess. Basically, there are a couple ways that they could do it at ASU. If someone doesn't know if they're at the point to be ready for college, they have a really cool program called, and I'm blanking on the name, but it's almost like Get Ready for College. And what it is you can take 4 classes, you know, sequentially or however you choose to do it. You only pay for them after you pass them. So you can take as long as you need. And they prep you for the different areas of what you would need to be able to get into ASU. And then once you're done with those four classes, you can take classes. So it's lowering the bar and Dr. Crow's mission to make education available. So that would be a starter at the Education Foundation. And then they gave me course credit hours because I don't think people that are, especially if people are on the private side, I don't know if they'd be eligible for Pell Grants and things like that. So it would have to come through a foundation. So I'm working on it. So I have numbers, and I'm guessing, and it was a wild guess on my part, I said probably 25 to 30% of the people in Ash may want to take the class or get a degree. Do you have any feel?
Well, I was just wondering, do we know what happened with Rita Salado and that program?
They lost funding, they pulled out.
Okay.
And that was my next, once I went to ASU, and if I can see if I can get funding, my next would be Rita Salado for the GED portion of it, see how much would that cost.
Okay.
So one of the things that I've been finding with patients that come in to the behavioral health hospital in Huntsville and Selvage are being released from prison to halfway houses or probation or parole, things like that, is they feel very helpless and institutionalized. And from what I'm hearing from patients at ASH, I mean, because of the fact that they have to ask for the key to clear the bathroom, they become very institutionalized. And they feel like they're not getting prepped for the real world. So they get released from ASH, you know, I don't even know if this is when they're released from prison. And they're so institutionalized that there just isn't a reentry program. So besides education, is there some sort of other education that we could provide them with so that they could feel ready to reenter society successfully upon discharge?
The society readiness program?
Mm-hmm. Almost like digital education, right? You know, because if you've been in there a while, there's a lot that's changed. I mean, and here's a conversation with Dr. Bowen. It's going to be okay, but who's going to provide that?
Right.
I mean, we could put together, here's what's up on social media, and here is about all the apps that are out and what they do and what to look out for. I mean, we could do something like that. But I also think, at least on the forensic side, they have a behavior program, and as you get to certain levels, you gain the passes and the ability. On the civil side, you're in, and then you're out. Yeah, the whole time my son was there, never got a pass. When I would ask him, I'm like, you don't get passes? You just, it's like cold turkey? I said, yeah. I mean, when he came out, it was a year, it was the best year I had to ask. I mean, going to the store was overwhelming. Yeah, going anywhere was overwhelming.
And he doesn't find his job. And you're like, what's the
broken up. I give that to clients all the time.
We'll go over it in the report after you guys report, but that's pretty well attended. And what I found, and Jackie was very happy, we were pleased, that we had a lot of civil patients that came, and it went a full hour. Yeah, it was good, because usually you don't get that. On the forensic side, they nominated people from each unit to go represent them. So there were like two from each unit that reported on different things, and you had the executive level staff there that heard it, you know, and heard things that they hadn't heard before. And some notes to get things fixed. And we had the head of the grievance, we had quality, we had the head of maintenance, we had head of nursing, we had several letters in that. On the civil, we had Dr. Bowen, and then head of quality and head of nursing.
About the reentry, there's several agencies out there that do go and pick up patients from ASH, and certain agencies that the patients are going and leaving on PATH to visit.
On the forensic side?
On the forensic side. And so...
peer support agency?
Peer support agency, mm-hmm. Yeah. And those would be a good place to reach out to and see if maybe they could run some groups or something, because they have contracts with ASH. And so if you reach out with them, then maybe there might be some hope.
Kind of like Cheers and Star.
Star, mm-hmm. Cheers, Mark. Absolutely.
We tried this like 2 years ago, remember?
Well, I remember.
But that was bringing support in, right?
Well, since things have changed, and so there are people getting picked up again to leave on.
When did they change?
I'm sorry. That's okay. No worries. I'm just sure we're following rules.
And this is in regard to the forensic side.
Right.
So, and specifically CRU. But several of the patients are being picked up by some of the agencies and taken out on passes. If we reach out to any of these contracted agencies, find out exactly who's doing what, then maybe we can make some ground as far as maybe they can run a group. And there's plenty of peers in those agencies that would love to run a group like that.
Okay, so should we assign specific agencies to specific people within the IOC, maybe, so that we can spread it out a little bit? Lump all like on Lori or, you know, one or two people? I think that would be a great idea.
I think Hope Liz was one of the other ones too. Mm-hmm.
I have, I know COPA, which is Mark and PIR, said lunch with Shari yesterday, so I can, and I can put the follow up with this, so I'll ask her.
Okay.
And they're already on campus. Yeah, so I'll see if they want to do more, but if anyone wants to reach out to Hope Liz, okay, that'll be mine. Okay. And maybe, what do you think, Cheers?
Cheers would be the one, Star specifically, too.
Yeah, that's my IMC, that's a lot of success with Star.
But...
I can reach out to Star, okay.
So when you reach out to Char, we're in, COPA Health is, through the Employment-Related Services Department, the ERS Department.
Okay. I wonder if they want to do anything else.
Yeah, I'm sure they would love it.
Okay, so what all do you want to ask them for? I'm putting like a reentry program support group. What else can I talk to them about? Ask them what they have to offer. And what do they have to offer? And just, okay, I just want to make sure. I mean, do they specialize in certain groups? Like with Resilient, which is the old PSA. They did art, a lot of art awakenings and things like that. I know on the civil side, they have a whole ceramics. Do they have that on the forensic side? Arts and crafts and forensics and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they need that as much. Did I just say forensic and civil?
Yes, just correct.
Both, okay.
We can add in a list of items whenever we can give updates for the next meeting.
Discussion of safety of patients. So in the Auditor General's report, that was the one area that, remember, now we have a task force report from the governor, and then we have an Auditor General's report. On the Auditor General's report, ASH has addressed everything, but they had like two areas. One was patient safety, right? To make sure that they worked on that to reduce the number of incidents, peer on peer, peer on staff. And that was an area that they still seemed to have some struggle. That was one area. And then the other one was, if I recall correctly, they had a lot of vacancy. So when you have, and you've heard that on visits too, when you have a lot of, I think they were at 16% vacancy in open racks. So when they have that, you always have a lot of temp staff. We don't have enough staff where we hear that they can't go on patio breaks, they can't go here or there because there's limited staff. Those are two areas that they're supposed to address. And I think Kathy had a wonderful idea. That's something they did many years ago at Ash, long ago. They brought in special training for people that work at Ash, and it really brought down incidents and accidents a lot, and reduces like seclusion or restraint, teaching them better techniques on de-escalation instead of escalation, you know, or not doing de-escalation.
So, yeah, so I was saying that it just, you know, I think it's all the students and kind of stuff that maybe will come out, you know, enemies, or incomplete psychosis, because they really have to go on their meds, or, you know, sometimes they're just kind of stuck there. Anyway, as they start to escalate, because of those things, or they're angry about something going on, which is natural. You know, I personally try to kind of come down, not in an insulting way, but just in an understanding way, because I see a lot of nurses go right up with them. And they take it like a personal affront, and they're treating them like they're children, and they're treating them almost, you know, like a peer, they're just angry. And I think that is an excellent idea for a training. I can't tell you how many nurses, when I've been charged, I've had to ask another nurse to take over before we end up with the patient either protecting that nurse or tech, or punching a hole in the wall, and I've had to say, someone was going to that room where it's quiet. And let's just talk about this for a second, because obviously you need break. You know, so between the CPI, the, you know, how to, you know, protect ourselves and our patients if there should be a physical patient. A very good idea, because in that way, you know, we keep the whole team safe as well as the patient. Because I watched the patient once who did not get away. Hit his head against the wall so many times, he ended up having so many seizures we had to take him to the emergency department. Because restraint is the last ditch effort. And by the time we were putting him in restraint, within 15 minutes he started coming
back. Well, that's something that we've already brought up. We've talked about the reports. What can we do? I think there's two areas that I really have asked our legislators to step it up. One, I think money to upgrade the security and surveillance system, except they don't have audio. And when they're, I think that will also help resolve the number of complaints we get continuously, that the grievances are just, we can't just get them, and they're closed. So they're turned into complaints and then they're closed. I think that if people knew that you could hear it, and you could hear up to it, if someone's not treating someone with dignity or respect, or actually antagonizing, and then the patient just goes off, at least that you can look at what was going on.
Yeah, because when you only have visual interpretation, when you only have audio, a lot less room.
So that's, I love it. That's, I've already asked for, we've been asked for the 1.5, I think I said 1.5 to 1.8 million would change out both forensic and civil with up to, so what they have is really low. And the other thing that I mentioned is if we're going to do it, if they're going to do it, they need to make sure they get all those blind places
like that the cameras can't see currently, that are in bathrooms or bedrooms. So make sure that they really have someone come in that can place cameras appropriately to get the widest angle and most coverage too. That and the same.
Right.
People sometimes act better if they think they're being watched. So it'll be good for the staff too. So we're hoping that I think that would help. We hear that a lot. And send an actual report. I'll pull out some highlights. Okay, the first one, and I'll read it off for you, Natalie. It's #2019-6506. On this particular one, I just wonder, the patient reported that he swallowed two sharp objects that he bought off another patient. And he wouldn't disclose who gave it to him or anything else. He said it 1 to 2 inches. And he said his chest had a stabbing constant pain that lasted for an hour. And they just, a doctor, on-call doc and PNC were notified. And they created a care plan. And they had him stay in the day room. And they were going to monitor. So my question there on this one was like, if someone says they've swallowed something, I thought the protocol was to go into the ED because that does happen so often. And they call back and they do find things. Right? So, unless they have more information on this than we do. If they know that this person makes up things or something, I don't know. But if so, they should have written that down that we didn't believe it or whatever. But if someone says they swallowed something sharp, I would expect them to follow up with that.
Even if they make things up, what if this time you didn't? You know what I mean?
So that was that one. So I think we should ask for clarification on this. What aren't we seeing on that one? On a good note, we want to catch them when they're doing things good too. So on this one, #2019-6195. This was an incident that a patient was threatening another patient.
I'm sorry, Lori. Will you repeat the number one more time? So sorry.
It's 6195.
Thank you.
And with this one, it was a patient that was very agitated and agitated by another patient, and they seemed to know that dynamic was going on. And what happened was they talked amongst themselves, and then they decided they were going to move this person off that unit to another unit because they thought that this was something that was going to continue. So that was good. That was a good one.
Who did they move?
They moved the one that was really agitated. That was the next one is 6122, and this one was concerning to me. This is on forensics, and what happened when the staff was alerted that there was a fight going on in the day room by a patient yelling, fight, fight. What popped out to me and stood out is like, why wouldn't they know that there was a fight in the day room? The day room should be supervised. It shouldn't take a patient yelling, fight, to get eyes on the day room. So that was a little concerning to me. And there was a fight, and there was a blood and stuff, and it was uncontained. But to this one, and they put the patients on restricted D unit, and they moved them opposite halls. But my question is, where were the staff that the patient has to yell? And I don't know if it's typical. So that's...
You always have to move them up.
That's why the thing. And it's in the day room. I mean, sometimes it can happen in the bedroom if they're shared, and then you hear it and you run in. But for the day room, that was kind of question mark. So I wanted to ask about that one.
Yeah, you should have, like, in charge, I said, where I can watch everything.
And then the other way would be doing a 15-minute check or other things, maybe discharging or whatever patient in pain. So yeah, that doesn't really.
Here's a good one. So this one was 6424. And again, for this one, a patient was, he ran and told the nurse that he had swallowed something, but he didn't show any indication that he was having airway deficiency, that he was waving, and he wanted to go to the hospital, and the doctor on call was called, and they called the paramedic because he said he was having a hard time breathing, and they took him to the hospital. So for this one, he went to quite heavy. That was good. Another one, I just wanted to make a point because we hear when we're visiting the patients that sometimes they're reporting that they have, on the forensic side, I haven't heard this as much on the civil, that they have a lot of room searches for contraband, and sometimes they bring dogs in, and they say they never find anything. Well, that's what they tell us. So for this one, there was a unit search and wind down being done on the unit, and when they were winding, there were alarms going off near his private area, so they brought him to a private area to see what was going on, and when they did, they found a toothbrush that had been filed like a weapon. So they can't tell if they never did. I mean, so I thought just for us to have a perspective that it's not always they never find anything. If they never found anything, they probably would do these things, right? So,
right. Lori, can you tell me the number on that one with the search that you just read?
That one was 6430.
Great, thank you.
Okay. The next one was a patient that was, assaulting. It was an assault. And what they did after reviewing what happened, they decided he was supposed to be on COS. So that's something of sight, continuous observation. Is that that one? COS and then COS-LOS. LOS is line of sight. So they moved him from a COS to a COS-LOS. So constant observation is COS. LOS is line of sight right here.
Yeah.
So instead of just being in the room, eyes on him. So after this incident, they upgraded his monitoring. Sounds good. So I think that's all I had as far as that sounds. Grievances. We often hear that grievances never win. I can say that we've been given a lot of them. A lot of them are dismissed. They're not substantiated. Once in a while, they are. This was an instance where patient filed a grievance at the behavioral tech registry unit, was physically abused, pushing her to the ground, causing him or her to hit a chair. And what they did, the investigators, they asked staff, they asked interviews, and what they found upon review of the video surveillance, witness testimonies and records, there was sufficient evidence gathered during the investigation to support that they had been physically abused the patient. And as a result of that, there was a rights violation. So this one was upheld with the current video. That's good. So we know that sometimes it works. Not always, we know a lot of them don't.
Do you know how tech is for attorneys?
I hope so. No corrective action is required as the registry staff member is no longer employed at ASH. But per information during the investigation, he's no longer allowed to work at ASH. He's on the do not return list. Yeah, so that is good, because we know that sometimes other agencies get so excited when they see experience in a behavioral setting that they're like, yay, and they hire them right up. So you have people that shouldn't be working in those areas end up working. There was one. This one was a physical abuse allegation that another male peer faulted, which had been instigated by a female staff member. So they were saying staff and peer. And their investigation did interviews, watched the video, and based on the preponderance of evidence, the allegations that the accused female staff member instigated the fight between you and the male member, accused female staff tried to further incite you by going to speak to the patient's room hallway after the physical altercation are not substantiated. So this one, they said no, they didn't side with them. Again, as I'm reading these, I try to bear in mind if something happens, how often I see on there that the guardian was contacted. And what I notice, like I said last month, is that they do. You'll see it at the bottom, not on all of them, which makes me wonder, do they not all have guardians, yes or no? But it's sometimes 1 to 3 or 4 or 5 days later after the incident. Down at the bottom, it says guardian notified. But it's not always so tiny.
So now, aren't they supposed to be notified, you know, fairly quickly, like within a certain time frame, or is that not?
I had asked that when I'm on the phone with ASH administration,
mm-hmm.
and I said, no, not always. It depends. I don't know if we've asked yet. But that would be something that we'd like to know. Can we see, what are your guidelines for contacting guardians?
You can let me know for the legislature that there should be a rule. And I know, like, in a private hospital, for-profit hospital, when something happens, even if I'm in the middle of a whole lot going on, before the end of my shift or before I leave, at some point I will contact the guardian, whether it is a drug that needs to be signed off on, an incident that happened, you know, whatever kind of update, but that's the policy, you know, where I was working. So it just depends. I said with something like a state hospital, it seems like the legislature has to do that. I don't know.
So I hear a motion.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion.
Well, Alice is making a motion, and Ashley is seconding. I think that we'd like to understand the process of procedure, because I know that I've been contacted too at various hospitals. Well, I know that when we brought up last month, we asked about a specific incident of why someone's guardians weren't contacted when they went over to Maricopa Integrated Healthcare now, Valley-wise, we were told that's not our hospital, we don't control, they have the records, they can see they have a guardian, we don't control if they contact the guardian or not. Mm-hmm. So when people get transported for medical issues, they said they're not responsible to call the guardian. The hospital that's treating is responsible. They did tell me that verbally, but hopefully we'll understand that in the office. So we can ask whether are there policies and procedures, and we probably should say they want to modify it while on site at ASH, while off site for medical treatment.
And if there's policies or if there is some statute, I don't know, I could probably contact someone at the public judiciary to see, but if there is some statutes or policies that are in line with that, or I don't know, I did a quick Google search, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, you know, I always write down the shift
who has guardian, you know, or power of attorney, or, you know, whatever's going on. And if they are transferred to medical, I would immediately call if they were transferred. But yes, you're right. I don't know about what happens on that site. But I do know because they're the guardian or the power of attorney, all they have to do is call over there, and of course, it's verified from the chart. So that will be a learning experience for us.
Yeah. We don't know. And
that's a really,
Ash administration update this month. We really didn't have one. I followed up on the one question that you answered on 10 patients while in the hospital get their medical records. And if so or if not, is it consistent on both forensic and civil? And I called and left a message again today, so we'll kick that over to this month. Everyone's in favor, and I think it's one of the big ones.
I'm in favor because that was one of the big questions of our forensic clients.
Okay. Site visit report.
I just wonder if there's any safety concerns with clients talking about the records. When, you know, clients or patients, when clients ask me for their file, and I think there's a concern, I need to have a client over. So it's again, you know, advice of their attorney. But I don't know if there would be some safety concerns with having, and a lot of times, the medical, it's hard for us to interpret, right? So while I agree that they should have a right to their records, from my own personal perspective, but
there's more there, so on the line, people can
carry with
that. Well, there's HIPAA concern, and that's why I always tell people, look, I can give you printed out information on the meds that you're taking, but they're not going to have a name on it or anything. They're just going to explain in layman's terms one specific to the patient. You can go over anything else. But as far as, like, the med requisition or any of the other notes from the doctor, things like that, because other patients could get a hold of it, it's a HIPAA violation. But this patient was talking about even electronically, if there was a way, like, you know how we have that now? I think it's built in a portal throughout the state. He wanted to know if there's a way that he could get in and look and see, you know, what's been charted. He was concerned about medical procedures, which I actually told Dee if she would type up her part first, because she's so knowledgeable about the different problems that the gentleman had with his back, because she does interventional radiology nursing. So she knows a lot about the things that they do now, because the rod surgery, the old-fashioned stuff they introduced. So a lot of the things that he was having done and needed done to his back, his ablation. And he wanted to know, like, one of his next appointments on things like that, or if they were going to do it, and what the recommendations for treatment plan were. So, yeah, I told him I would try and find out for him, that I mentioned with Jackie, if there's any way he could at least do what we're allowed to do, and have to look at our electronic records. But I do know that I don't think there's, because I think it's against the law to hand him his records to keep with him. But I mean, he could probably look at them and then hand them back to the nurse.
You have the right, if you choose, to share your information.
Yeah. The hospital can't share my information or his information.
Here's the code.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I just know what I was told, that they can get it upon discharge. But I think that if that is a state law, which I don't know for sure, if it's hospital by hospital, because these are long-term clients, if they could even have it, look at it, and then give it back to the nurse, or if they are allowed to have the copy, you know, something like, yeah, because they are long-term clients, but it's probably a different feature.
Okay.
that one is very voluminous, so I don't know. I've never seen the locker there.
No, I got my son's ex when he was out, and they were sick. But the things that they don't have to include are the doctor and nurse type notes. They don't have to include those. They can include what your diagnosis is and what meds you're on or other stuff, but they don't put their thoughts on your therapy and your treatment. Unless, of course, they find that giving you that information could be detrimental.
Right. Which is why you usually don't get fined for the whole 11 report.
Yeah. It's upsetting.
It is.
So your patient on the forensic side, there's the one on forensic and one on civil. Was there anything else, Alice, on the client you did this?
Real quick, it says here, after they request, they, within no later than 10 working days after request, they should be able to see their record.
So what is that copy of?
The Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment. Behavioral Health Service person who's up and running. That's Arizona Administrative Code.
So we have to add, like,
we have like 30 days to use those records. There's a reasonable time for you to have to use those records too. If they ask them normally, I don't know
why they're still paying
available starting within the next treatment or supervision, except when inspection of the client's records is required under established judicial order or by a physician in the life of emergency, family member may challenge the decision to allow or deny inspection of the records by filing a request for administrative and judicial review in accordance with provisions ARS or other applicable federal state law. Once a request is filed, no further disclosure of records shall be made until the review is completed.
See, this is that stuff. So that's inpatient, outpatient. Still doesn't tell us what level, what their policy is.
Yeah.
So we'll ask for that. Anything else on your visit with your client?
Okay, so. Yeah, his big concern was about the treatment plan for his death because he's been very, very painful and he's having a harder time walking now because the way that it's explained to me by he is they do cortisone type injections, on one side and then that on the other. I guess they don't do it all at once. And she had kind of explained it and she that's her area of medical understanding. But I guess he's had this problem since like the late 80s. So because this isn't working, it works for a short time, but then he's in so much pain in other places and his neck. He said that he would really like to go to the ablation that Dr. Higgins, he used to be his pain management doctor, had recommended. Now, I guess they don't have a contract with Dr. Higgins. So, one of the things we asked Jackie to look into is if he could have, if it was possible to make a one-time contract with him or something, since he's been following him for so long.
I think that,
I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, we can't tell them how to practice medicine. I know that.
No, we can't. And he's uncomfortable because of the fact that he's not being taken care of by another care team. So he wanted us to know, of course, like when his next appointment was and things like that. And I said, well, nobody, have you asked? And of course, like I usually get, well, no. And so, Jackie said she would definitely look into it and, she would write some specific things down for him about the visit as well as his concerns.
concerns that they're now limiting their computer and TV time. And he felt like it was cool. So I had asked Jackie, why is this rule implemented? Kind of knowing myself probably why. And she said it's because they get in big arguments that somebody's essentially bogarting the computer for a long time or the TV for a long time, and everybody needs to have their turn. So she said she doesn't have like a specific rule, kind of unit to unit. So since that's a rule in the unit, I said maybe if you would, in your own words, just write it down, paragraph, and give it to him so that he won't feel like singled out like he's been doing, or as though their unit is singled out. He provided with an explanation that he seemed like he could get forgetful. He could keep that.
We had somewhere, and then we had explanations on why it was.
Yeah, I think it's good for them to have that. And, you know, if they request it, it's good for them to give them that, especially if they're forgetful.
It's just organized
where
doing it, you know.
Yeah, I just see Tina does a sign-up sheet.
Yeah, you just make a sign-up sheet for whatever hour. And then for some first serve, you pick an hour. And you get the time with the feed you to the computer. And if there's any extra time that no one is using, you can use that time, you know, or you can sign up for that time, which is good.
What they're doing too, forensic or they now have DVD wallets, or they have DVDs, and they are allowing you access to DVD library and players, and they say it reduces stress and conflict on the unit, because now people are watching their own DVDs, and it's a reduction in fighting over TV. So they do have, I don't know how prevalent these are, I don't know whether family has to buy them, or patients buy them, but they have these DVDs. Wallets and DVD players.
Well, our tables are rolling out tablets with some digital data in Australia this last week. So all the inmates are getting tablets, which I think is modeled after Humor Canal that has a similar model, and they really noticed it decreased conflict. So
I think one of the problems, though, if you recall, I think the first visit we did together, they were worried about them getting stolen, theft, getting broken or beaten to weapons. And so, really, I think the answer is probably kind of what you're talking about in Australia, everybody having one and having the same thing. I don't know.
They're rolling them out all the time.
That would make more sense to me, because if everybody has, like, their name or their, you know, and not everybody even has one, you can have to have issues with that. And then, of course, the other thing that I heard again was anytime you file a grievance, he feels it's either ignored, unsubstantiated, and retaliation against him is pretty clear. And then he talked about kind of what you're talking about with maybe a person who doesn't shift to the ED. He said that he feels, I mean, obviously, he's a patient, not a doctor, this is just something he feels, but he's seen that there have been six people who he's been there, for many years he's been there, that have died, that he knows of because of lack of staff and staff neglect to give medical care or to be taken to the emergency department. So... Oh, and then the other thing was he feels like the psychiatrist will lie. That was another, I thought this was kind of interesting. He thought it would be neat if there would be an outside source that would have a recording of the patient's psychiatry visit, and that they would keep those records. So if there's a discrepancy between what the psychiatrist says occurred or the current and what the patient talks about, they would have a clear-cut recording of it. But he's afraid, of course, if it's kept by the hospital, if it's lost,
change. You know what I mean? Right. But I thought that was an interesting idea.
I think that they will tell us.
Yeah.
No, it's not in our purview. One, it would cost money. And I just don't think they'd go for it.
But I just want to throw it out there because he asked them to. And he, you know, as I've heard from other patients before, he feels that people are there for long durations, and also a lot of times for the entire their entire sentence with the DOC due to lack of proper documentation and care. And so if they are recovered, he feels like it's not worth it. So his main big concern. Like I said, I told him to go ahead and I gave her a copy of the questions that he gave me. And I said if she would type up her notes first, and I also scanned it into someone's mind, then I'll go on ahead and put it in the thing that I know.
So do you have any other comments on the same patient that you visited with Alice?
Yeah, I did type up the entire, you know, bits and pieces of information from both patients, both from the civil and the forensic side. I'm happy to pass it along if that's the way to do it. I wrote down, it did like about a page and a half. So I agree with everything that Alice said. I mean, there was clearly several areas that, you know, he was upset about. He did discuss one particular patient. I thought it was his roommate, Alice, the one who had the pacemaker failure.
Yes.
He said that the guy was obviously not well. He went and told staff. They basically took him and stuck him in the shower or something. I don't even really remember what he said, but it ended up this guy had a pacemaker failure, and they waited so long to address the issues that the patient finally decompensated, and they finally called for, you know, medical transfer, and he died. So that was one of the things that he brought up. And then I also, in some of the stuff that I wrote down that I would like to pass along if you guys want me to, is that he gave some very specific information on certain staff. I don't know if that's important, that he thought were a big part of the issue, that were retaliating against him and, you know, basically ignoring him anytime he brings up his concerns to the staff. But I guess it's up to you guys. Since I'm still new, I'm not really clear on what you do and don't want and how much in detail you want and who I should send it to. I'm having a hard time hearing everybody, too, by the way.
We can also ask and say, based on information we've heard, we would like further information on this. Because I know Ashley and Leon and I, Kim isn't on tonight, but, you know, we've been on the committee for a while. I don't think we've ever seen a death.
Well, I know it reports a death from here, and we see that in the annual report.
But I haven't seen it in the instant accident death report.
No.
And I know Jim needs to read through the reports too, and we hear it by other means that someone died, and we never get the report. It would never get reported. I haven't heard someone dying recently while we've been, you know, but how would you know? You wouldn't know why. And precipitating factors, what you knew. Go ahead and send that along also.
Okay. And I'm sorry, we didn't ask him at what time frame this happened. So I don't know how long ago that was. This gentleman's been there at the hospital for quite some time, so it could have been anywhere along the 10 or 15 years that he's been there too, so.
That would be good if you could pass that along. And then you visited someone on the civil side as well.
Yes, and I don't know. Know what you really gleaned from that?
Well, it was hard. He was difficult to follow. His concerns sounded very genuine. You know, he doesn't have any hope of ever leaving. despite, you know, he feels he has places to go. He was unhappy with the treatment team, feels they ignore him and don't want to discuss certain subjects that he would like to. And he wanted someone to talk to the treatment team because there's, quote, unquote, no progress and, quote, unquote, they've locked him up and thrown away the key. So that was about the gist of the conversation with him. I really felt bad for him.
And it's hard to say because we're not sitting there when he's talking to the treatment team. You never know when. It was hard to say if there were moments where he didn't seem lucid for a very short time, and then he wants to get out because he thinks he's going to be the answer. He thinks he's the best dancer in the world, and he's very famous, and he would be dancing with, what, Ricky Martin and Marky Mark? And that he's the wealthiest man in the world, and that's part of why they're keeping him for his money, I think. Isn't that what?
Yeah. It's very interesting.
He also wants an exorcism. That he needed that for a month. Well, have you seen the chaplain? He said, but they're not giving me the exorcism that I need. And then he said what he wants to talk about is things like Satan and the presidency and different things like that, but the treatment team and the therapists and people aren't talking about that with him. They're trying to talk about him and what's going on with him.
So.
And so it was very confusing, and he was kind of all over the place.
I just have a question. Yeah. Is there a screening process you guys go through before you meet with patients, or is it how do you?
We don't choose them. Jackie gets requests from patients. Jackie. Advocate. And she tells us, we have a request for you to come talk to this patient. We have talked to a gentleman, a civil patient that was really, really, really very, he couldn't, and he would rely on Jackie saying, but is that real or not real? I mean, he would use her. It happened. And he had a hard time following treatment. Mm-hmm. Once he got a guardian, things changed quite a bit. And then he was following the treatment plan, and when we went to see him 2 or 3 months later, we were just amazed at his progress. He looked like he could actually get out. I mean, we were so happy, because the first time it was like, he's been there for, he's a young man, he's been there for 6, 7 years. Just really, when they're like that, I usually say, do you know what you need to do? Progress. You know what your plan is. You know what, and if they don't go in and out, I'm like, you have a guardian.
And he does. He's a parent.
And he thinks
he's a page. He says that he's gay and he loves sex and he's kind of all over the place. And it felt to me, he said he was there for 15 years, which I don't know if that was true or not. Jackie didn't confirm or deny. That's why he felt like he locked up and thrown away the key. Yeah. So that's why it's hard to say, would he be able to follow his treatment? I don't know. God bless them. But if they request that they want to see someone, at least, you know, Dee and I were active listeners, you know, and he felt like somebody heard him, which is really important.
And that was a gentleman that we saw. I saw him twice, and then someone else saw him again. Mm-hmm. So we've seen him 3 times, and the guardian had called and said, it really gave him hope. And I said, at least we give him hope. And I said, and other people will say, you know what, maybe you should not get angry, and maybe try this, you know, because some people just hurt themselves by going off and making bad assumptions, and then sometimes that's helpful for them.
And Dee, don't you feel like we did a good job at that, of just saying, hey, you know, we hear you, right?
Yeah, I mean, you do the best you can, especially with the gentleman that was over on the civil side. It was really hard to, I kind of kept trying to redirect him saying, like, how can we help you? What can we do for you? And it was so hard.
You did, but you know, I felt like he was hurt, because didn't he say he felt he had some hope? I mean, I don't know if
he felt he had hope because he thought he was going to be going on tour. But either way, I thought your questions were great, and I thought that, you know, you made him feel like, yeah, hey, we're here, we care, we want to know what we can do for you.
Yeah, I was trying. I hope he got that from that. I just don't know how we could really help him.
Well, I think we did in a way.
Yeah. Just to be there, right? That's all he needed was to hear, have somebody there to hear him.
Are we able to visit people in the hospital just without request from the patients?
Not as the IOC. If you go as an IOC member, after two of you, that's been pre-planned. If you go to visit, you're allowed on their visitors list, you can do that, but then you can't access as part of the IOC. I mean, you can't come back and say, I'm bringing this up as an IOC member. That would be compliment.
So let's say you and I went as IOC members, would you be able to suggest a vehicle patient at random?
I think what we did, and I went to the civil and the forensic forum, and they have them every month. So while we didn't have any people from the civil side to visit, I asked Jackie, I said, could we go and just go in the day room? And she said, sure. Now, so we could do that, go to the unit and sit in the day room. People will come to talk to you. If someone has a guardian, they can ask us to make sure the guardian's okay with us talking to this person. So we have to ask. But I think it's interesting to want to go next time they have this. So here's what we had from our civil side. We had probably 10 or 12 folks. They want better food. They want better food choices. They want more water. So apparently, now on this different question, they only have these little cups, and they can only have cups, and they're not allowed to bring cups to their room. And part of the problem, one gentleman was saying that he likes water at night so he can have it. There's a rule, and he was saying before in his share that I never break the rules. And as they were talking, some other patients, he said, just hide the cups, be able to bring them in your room. Dr. Lowell was like, I thought you didn't break the rules. Yeah. And so you can tell, I'm not sure why that rule's in place and what they think is going to swallow the cup. And that's what I was thinking after reading other swallowing incidents. But they do want more water. They think they're limited on water. They want better drink choices in the machine. And they prefer everything in the machine to be free. Okay, as we all do. Their complaints about the grievance process on the civil side. It's not fair, it's not transparent. They don't understand why things turn into complaints. They don't understand why people aren't held accountable. Staff professionalism, they said some staff lack it. They're just not professional. And it ends out. Video games and donations, they would like more of that. Also, the temperature being so cold in the unit that they have to wear so many clothes that they're freezing. And when I did ask about that, they said it's hard to regulate the temperature. They've regulated warmer than someone else's unit or someone else's too hot. So that. But it appeared, I've been in there also when it's been really cold. They said that they have no keys for their lockers, and they never have had keys ever since some new lockers got put in. So Dr. Bowen said they'd look into that and make sure they all have lockers. If they don't have lockers, they'll get new keys for the lockers. And something about, they say that they have to find out about job opportunities almost after the fact, that by the time they hear about a job opportunity, someone else has it. So they think it would be fair to have a bulletin board fall job opportunity and make sure that everyone has fair access and fair notice so it's not so my favorite job. Yeah.
And that's a great advantage.
No, in the hospital. So some people work in the cafe, some people work in the clothing store, some people work in the mark.
This is civil.
They have different rehab needs, but this patient had been on the forensic, served out for the time, and then the physician and committed on the civil side. And he likes what they have on the forensic side there. They have remote control cars that they could face, and they don't have any of that on the civil side. So he asked about that. I asked about, on the forensic side, they did a lot of woodworking, and then they played cornhole games. So that was, he wishes to get more of a forensic opportunity.
It seems like there should be an opportunity to kind of level up to being able to get a job regardless of where you're at, whether or not you found the job or not, because on the forensic side, that's how it is. Like everyone actually gets to the point where they get an opportunity to be able to work after they've been there and done well in the treatment. Everyone gets an opportunity because of, you know, even if it's just painting something, you know, so considered work, they get paid to do it. So it sounds like,
you should ask about, are the job opportunities less uncivil?
Right.
I have a motion.
I second that one.
Well, that was Natalie.
I'm sorry, I missed who that was, the motion and the second.
That was Alice that motioned and Leon that seconded. All in favor?
Thank you. Thank you.
So moved. So the forensic side was a little longer. I put them in categories. So about food and forensic. They ran out of coffee twice last month. They used to get 6 cups of coffee per day. Now they only get 2. And it really helps keep patients alert for programming, because they're on medications and sometimes they fall asleep in their group. So they like more coffee, so they'll fall asleep in their group. And they would like to revive food committees that they used to have, where patient representatives from the unit would go and they'd work with the dietitian, and they would bring choices and menu choices. And that hasn't happened, so they'd like that. And they would like salad options. They said sometimes your salad options aren't good. It's wilted hot and burnt. Repairs. Broken TV, the sound bar doesn't work, the canter, the TV cuts, the plexiglass, the volume is too low, the remote's broken, the vending machine's broken, it has broken glass, some machines are non-functioning, the shower's broken on tomorrow. They would like a durable exercise bike. That's the ones that they get terrible use, they'll break quickly, and it's too cold on the unit. That was on my friend's side. Then they also said the TV's turned off too early. It's turned off at 11 p.m. Someone, I think nursing, said the reason why it's turned off at 11 p.m. now was this was a treatment team input, so patients will sleep. Before they had this,
it's normal to be
patients would stay up late, they sleep in that participating treatment. So that was a treatment team decision. And we talked about the DVD wallets and DVDs, reducing stress, reducing fighting. Phone time. They need more phone time. A lot of people, they're very articulate. They said, we're done with all programming at 3. Why do we have to wait, you know, and only have 2 hours of phone time? And they said, we should be able to have phone time from, say, 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, because it's before bedtime. Right now, it's only 3 to 5. So they didn't like that. A lot of complaints over one of the operators that it takes way too long to answer the phone, way too long to be transferred. So at times when they're on the phone, they can't get the operator to call out or to answer the phone when people call in. And they did make a point of the male operator is really good, and the female one is the one everyone complains about. So they were going to look into that. Staff shortages. They're so short they can't go on the patio. They get retaliation from staff on agreements with their boss. They don't have privacy sometimes when they're on the phone or during visits. Some staff is very intrusive, and they hang around and listen. They have the conversation.
Some people want to know if they're complaining.
Yeah. Some staff make up rules as they go. This was another one. Searching with dogs on forensic, not turning up any contraband. And then during searches, staff watch patients go to the bathroom. They find that usually. Rehab staff, lots of complaints, and everyone nodded. The rehab staff always starts late and ends early, either early or on time. It's very unfair. It interferes with the program. It interferes with visits, it interferes with activity. So they're supposed to have a visit for 2 hours. Sometimes by the time rehab gets down there, it's 20 minutes in. And sometimes when they're at an activity, same thing. It's 10 minutes late or 15 minutes late when they end right on time. So they feel they're being shorted programming time and visit time. IOC meetings. Staff on forensics are not being allowed patient units to call in. And I sent this in to ASH administration. They're having patients leave the room after they call to participate in the IOC meeting. And some thought that staff members may belong to COA, Correction Officers Association, that may be a conflict of interest since it's a therapeutic environment, not a correctional facility. So they were concerned that if they have staff members that belong to that, they probably think like that and behave like that. Access, they want access to a phone book and to internet education. Some people that have the money go on to school, but even some government sites are blocked on the internet over there, and it takes a long time to get them unblocked. And they would like access to legal documents. They wanted to know about treatment delays and medication. Who has the final authority to determine who says what they can do and what they can't do? What policy dictates the authority? New mail system's a mess. It's cumbersome and it's causing delays. Apparently, if they want to send a package or get a package, it's a really long procedure now. So sometimes it takes weeks. And sometimes their mail is lost. What's the process for exception of contraband? Some people that do not sell farm want full-size pencils. Those small bendable ones are hard to use for long periods of time. They want hair conditioner because if alcohol is listed as the first, you can't have it. But some of them, it's listed as like the seventh or eighth ingredient. It's very minute amount. And they said, the hospital now got rid of conditioner for your hair. They have all of the products and it's not working. Some people with ethnic hair have a hard time when they don't have conditioner. Their hair's getting really dry. They also feel rules are being implemented for one patient that acts badly and does not follow the treatment team. And many people are working hard for their, they're doing well. And then the whole unit gets penalized because one person won't behave. So they feel like that's not fair. They'd like a mirror in the gym for weightlifting. They'd like a process to get braces. They want more patio time, which was interesting because we had a lot of executive team there. And what they said was that the forensic patio, they can share patio. So they said, you can use this patio. And someone said, well, that patio is always being used, and that doesn't help us at all. And they said, we can also use this patio. So there is some flexibility on the patio they can use. I don't think they're mixing units when the patios go out, but they did listen to them and take notes. That was good.
Okay, so these are the things that I'd be able to learn if I'm able to go to the meeting.
They were very talkative, and the administration interacted and tried to some of them like, well, what, you didn't know this was broken. I didn't know this was broken. Well, now you know. We'll fix it. So hopefully these things get addressed. Mm-hmm. And we'll know by next month if they still are broken, and we're going to say, well, you knew about it now. So hopefully they're being addressed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Public comment. Deborah.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
We have someone else talking right now, but in 1 minute you'll be on. What is that?
They are no longer accepting my grievances or appeals or Jim. And according to the administration codes, R-9-21-201A12, on page 8, anyone can file a grievance. Mm-hmm. So I went to my lawyer. The lawyer called this person that said she wasn't allowing me or Tim to do any more grievance than appeal. No answer and no return. And here's a copy. She said I didn't have guardianship. Guardianship has nothing to do with it, but I do have guardianship. So these access people are not high enough. In other words, educated enough, like, to know what the guardian really, really is, and the mental health powers take them apart. They're totally separate, and they mean totally different things. And this person here does not know what they are. And that's too bad, that access. So they're not going to accept any more grievance and appeal. Until, I mean, anybody can file one, and having them put this on paper and violate the rights straight up, I don't know how they think they can do that. So, I do have the order of my guardianship, the lawyer gave me. But it's not going to make a difference. They don't want to see me, and they don't want to see Tim's grievances that I followed through with. And some of them, and it was real funny because the grievance that letter's going to is about a doctor, psychiatrist. All of a sudden they do five extension, and then that letter. And I'm sure that information came from the doctor themselves, that I did not have guardianship. But that was the main idea that I wanted to bring about, because there are guardians there. But the fact is that access has shown that access doesn't even know anybody can file it. And the statutes are not being followed. And when I do agreements, I go through these administrative codes to match them. And at the bottom of the grievance, I put the codes. Okay? So there's no question for them if they follow the codes. They do not follow the codes. I was astonished that Access did that. So.
Is this public comment time?
I feel that is the singling out. As well as not for whatever reason.
you know, that's in general. You can call
the Department of Economic Security, because in this aspect, Jackie has not helped. She is not, all she is an advocate, okay? And I feel it's about time that the hospital has a legal, non-biased person, and I got the information for you guys, so for the patients, because who pays Jackie? The hospital. How can she not be biased? So I feel it's time that bigger and better things come for the patient. I mean, not unique, Jackie, but make sure there's another availability there that they're aware of that will help them if they don't feel that Jackie is biased. Yes.
Now, who do we have on the phone that would like to speak?
Hi, this is Timothy Briasco on Sycamore Unit.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Pardon? Would you like your name in the minutes?
Yes, ma'am. Most definitely.
Okay, thank you.
I was late coming in, been on the phone for about 37 minutes. The retaliation is all day, every day. If you write a grievance on a staff member, the investigator goes into the nurse's station, has a conversation with them before they even come and see you. The investigators, a certain few, are not going by their superiors' demand that they record each grievance conversation. They're trying to, I heard somebody say the staff and the psychiatrist, my team has fabricated things, made my mom to be the bad guy. I filed probably 150 grievances. I've won two. Like she said, that there's no more grievances going to be filed or accepted from Access. That's a shame. But you do good here, and then they push you and push you and push you, antagonize you until you snap out, and then they take everything away again, and then you have to work back up, back up, back up. I don't know. The medical care here is very poor, to say the least. I had an issue with my penis, and I had to have part of it cut off because of the lack of care, how long it took me to get medical attention. I shouldn't have to go to bed. I'm DNR, but I shouldn't have to go to bed every night praying that I have a heart attack in my sleep because I don't want to wake up in the morning and deal with the room. What is that noise?
If anyone else in the call, if you could just place yourself on mute, please. We're getting a little bit of feedback.
Go to bed. Come on. Going to bed every night and hoping for a heart attack. So I don't have to wake up and deal with the crookedness, the shadiness, the staff conspiring to make you look bad and make you feel bad mainly. It's psychological warfare here, emotional warfare, and it's got to stop, because either they're going to do something, or I don't want to say this, but I feel something bad might happen, and it's not going to be good for either side. But as I do every day, I get up, I try to be vigilant and do what I'm supposed to. I can't go to groups because they won't give me enough water. I take 50 plus pills a day. Yes, 50. And they give me 2 bottles of water a day. I can't drink the water out of the faucet. It gives me really bad heartburn, which in fact, then I would have to take more pills. But I told them I cannot go to any more groups if I cannot take tea, which they provide for me every meal on my tray and with the cart. And I can't go to any more groups because I can't sit there and have cotton mouth the whole day. But just, I know what their next move is, and it's going to be all this falsification that the doctors and my team have put together to be vindictive and take control of my mother's guardianship and take it away. It just, it's sad. And if you would like to come see me and talk, I have a lot to say. And Jackie, she does try, but like the people say, Who's paying her meal ticket? They're not going to throw them under the bus. I pray for my peers here, but I really pray not to see another day.
Can I speak now, please? Hang it up. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, I'm John Wallace on Sago Unit. Yes, you can use my name in a minute. Not long after I came to the ASH in 2005, my roommate's pacemaker malfunctioned and he died. He did so because the staff didn't immediately recognize the man's distress for what it was. It was then that I began to realize that everyone involved, you know, in mental health care is biased against people with a mental disorder. In fact, human beings in general are naturally biased. We have a negative perception of anyone labeled with a brain disorder. I believe it's evolutionarily in us. Anyway, about the safety of patients, it feeds back to that. I have identified a culture of deprivation and neglect among the staff. They are, not long after I came to Sago, to give another example, a patient attacked a patient in the day room. A third patient called out to the lead tech twice. The lead tech did not hear him because the lead tech and the other tech on duty were sitting together at the confluence of the living spaces and the day room talking, and were so engrossed in their conversation that they were not aware of what was going on around them. I called out to the lead tech. He did not become aware of the fight until the bloody victim of the assault walked toward him, and the lead tech saw his bloody face and asked him what had happened. Every day, the patients have to tell the staff, hey, we just heard the activity called on the radio. Would you let us out the door? Because the staff don't hear what's going on around them. They don't hear their radios. They aren't aware of the milieu because they're so involved in conversations with each other, their cell phones, watching TV, or reading. Then I would like to mention, you know, I was sent to Dr. Higgins last January. If he isn't contracted to provide me with treatment, why was I sent to him in the first place, and why hasn't his treatment plan been followed, even if he can't do it? Just to mention on the DVDs and video games, we're allowed 3 discs on the SAGO unit. We're only allowed access to the storage area where we keep the rest of our DVDs and music CDs once a week. That leaves us with pretty much nothing to do. Also, we're only given 4 hours a day total of access to the computers and the small TV with the video game system. There were more than 20 hours of unused time on our sign-up schedule every day this week. We should be allowed to use that time. We are not, because the staff just don't want to deal with the situation. And that has been a problem at this hospital. I have been asked time and time again to give up things because it's an inconvenience for the staff. I work in the garden. In the summertime, I come back to the unit, and even though I drink water constantly, I'm dehydrated, and I ask for ice and water and can't get it because the staff don't want to deal with it at that time. Even though they're not doing anything but talking with each other. We're limited to access to ice and water during meals and at 10 o'clock in the morning and at 2 in the afternoon. Those are the only times we can get water. Now, at the time last summer, the water from the drinking fountains was warm, the fountains were shut off, and the filter hadn't been replaced in a long time. The water left an oily film in your mouth and had a bitter aftertaste. The filter has been changed recently, and the machines are turned back on, so we have chilled water in the day room, and the problem is no longer there. But still, the culture of deprivation and neglect persists to this day. I'm going to send you a packet with 3 attempts to help the staff understand this prejudice that there is ingrained in all of us. The packet weighs 6.4 ounces. It's just 3 attempts and detailed descriptions of the behavior of the staff. They call them complaints. I have never filed a complaint in the 15 years I've been at the ASH. I just report the conduct of staff to their superiors and then suffer the retaliations. And I report them too, but nothing ever changes. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are you there? Okay, my name is James Norton from SOGO Unit. So I know last time I had sent in an application for the IOC. I haven't been responded to that yet, so I'm just wondering exactly as far what's happening as far as that goes. Right now, I need it just came to my attention that the treatment team actually considers this not a hospital environment, but a correctional environment. and has specifically told almost every single patient on our unit that we are quote-unquote inmates in a correction, in a DOC or correctional facility, when it's actually a hospital and is supposed to be treated like one. The treatment team, I mean, we've all had issues with the treatment team, that I'll discuss later. And then there's specifically two very specific nurses on our unit. One, when she came to our unit not that long ago, she withdrawed. It wasn't until she came to our unit that almost every single thing that we actually liked on this unit or anything like that has been since taken away from us. And that's what was making our unit run really good, was because we were actually getting to do things that we actually liked, that we were entertained us, that, you know, we enjoyed. So, and that's about it. So if I could get some response on, as far as, you know, my application, if it had gotten accepted or if it got denied, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, we're not allowed to respond to public comment questions, but we will get serious. Is there anyone else that's in the public? Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll motion this, Natalie.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? So moved. And tonight we don't have a meeting, but we will continue in January. Let everyone know when the forms are, and I'll ask Jackie for the visit list. We did have a request today for a visit, something like that. And we'll try to use a doodle to figure out the time to go. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful holiday. Enjoy your holiday gifts that you get.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.